What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded during TBRCon 2024, the latest edition of FanFiatic's all-virtual annual science fiction, fantasy, and horror convention, which streamed live between January 21st and January 28th, 2024. FanFiatic and TBRCon had the pleasure of hosting 25 amazing author panels, and we're so happy to be able to provide the audio for you for free here on the podcast feed. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fantastic TBRCon 2024 author panel.
Hello and welcome to the Small and Mid-Sized Publishers panel. My name is Peter Chakowski. I'm really excited to be moderating today and getting to ask some questions from some really gifted folks in the world of small and mid-sized publishing, learning about the philosophy that they bring to their work and the kind of work that they do. So I'm excited to sort of host this session. In the chat, you can go ahead and leave questions that you have for our panelists, and we're going to circle back at the end and do a Q&A involving audience questions. So if you have any specific burning desires, things you want to learn about this sort of creative and editorial space, please drop those in the comments and chat. We would love to hear from you and discuss those. But to start out, I think let's introduce our panelists. Like I said, my name is Peter Chakowski. I work for a company called The Story Engine, where I design decks of writing and storytelling prompts. So I come at the world of publishing from less of a books perspective and more of a things adjacent to the writing and creative process perspective. But that's me. And now I'll have Caroline. Could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Caroline Lamb, and I'm Irish, living in England, and I am the lead publicist for Angry Robot Books and also Datura Books, which is our crime fiction imprint, which we launched last year. In a nutshell, that's
lovely. And Fabian, could I please have you introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Fab. I work for Grimdark Magazine, where I do a lot of coordination work and the PR work, but I also work for an audiobook publisher in my day job.
Double duty. Selena, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm Selena. I am the publisher and editor-in-chief at Stelliform Press. Stelliform is a Canadian micropress that started in 2020. We publish climate and environmental speculative fiction.
Awesome. And May.
Hi, I'm May Marie. I am the founder of Medusa Publishing House. I'm originally from Arkansas, but I live in Boston now, and so I come from a marginalized background, and I use Medusa Publishing House to kind of like find the diamond in the roughs of people who may have not been published yet, marginalized creators who are kind of, you know, wanting their first publication but don't know where to go. And the entire point of the press is really just to kind of take those writers and editors under, you know, my wing and kind of like push them out into the world and get them a little bit of publicity and some publications under their belt. So
super rad. And I'm excited to discuss some topics where we can talk about, I guess, demystifying the publication process, because we may have folks in the audience who are writers, we may have folks who are thinking about working in publishing, and we want to be able to talk about all those aspects. So I'm excited for that. Alan, could you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Alan Lostufka. I founded Shortwave Publishing. We're a small press that focuses mostly on horror and dark sci-fi.
Awesome. And Brooke? Oh, you're muted still.
Wow, that's a great start, isn't it? Hi, guys. I'm Brooke. I'm a Kiwi. I'm living in the UK at the moment, and I'm one of the lead editors at Portal Books. We focus primarily on fiction, fantasy, and lit RPG.
Awesome. And Bryce.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bryce O'Connor. I am best known as an author and the writer of the Stormweaver series. But in this context, I am the CEO of Wraithmark Creative, which has a variety of functions, but we're best known for doing deluxe editions of a variety of different books, usually via Kickstarter.
Very cool. Well, I love that we've got a variety of perspectives and publishing focuses. I think there's going to be so much rich material in our discussion. But to start out, could you each talk a little bit about what was your path into the world of publishing? What did that look like? What were the things that drew you to it? What were the sort of some of the obstacles that you might have run into? And what really attracted you to it? I think we'll do the same order again, starting with Caroline.
Yeah. I think the easiest way to describe what drew me into it was just probably true for everybody, a love of books. It was that simple thing from being a child where you were encouraged to find the typos on restaurant menus. And, you know, we loved books in the house. And as I got older, went to uni, did my arts degree in English and history, and just kind of was like in one way accidentally fell upon it. It was really like, I love the idea of reading things and finding the root of what is working, what isn't. And so it was editorial that appealed to me. But I think, like most people, if you don't know anything about publishing, the editor is what you know. And in Ireland, it was the only, not sure if it still is now, I left like 11 years ago. We have a master's in literature and publishing over in the West in the University of Galway. So I was lucky enough to get in there. And through that, we had like weekly seminars with people from across the country. Different publishers would come down, agents. It being the joys of a small island, you actually get to know people within the industry really well, really quickly. We were offered to apply for an internship at one of the independent houses in Dublin. And I was lucky to get it. Kind of fast forward 6 weeks there and a job came up like 2 months later. So I was exceptionally lucky, because the pitfalls of being a small island are that there's not very many jobs. Speaking now 15, 20 years ago. So it was exceptionally great timing. And the only position it was publicity. And the best bit of advice I was given by an agent during one of those seminars was, it doesn't matter what you want to do, just get in. You can move sideways, but just get in. And throughout the internship, which had been more publicity led, I was a bit like, oh, I think I like this. So I took the job and discovered that I am so much more of a publicist. Could not sit on my own with a manuscript all day, every day. I definitely, I don't know, Bryce, when we were chatting before, I said he's a bit of an extrovert. I was like, so am I. So the publicity world just really works for me. And I've been there, a little bit of maternity break in the middle, and we moved to Italy for a little bit. But yeah, I've been there ever since in publicity.
Awesome.
So I used to be in academia. I used to be a historian. And then as I kind of went down that path, I realized that actually what I'm interested in is the stories behind the history. It's the ideas. It's why people tell stories. So I essentially decided to quit and move to a different country and initially did a master's in publishing. And kind of quite early on in that, I fell in with Grimdark magazine because I was a book reviewer and they were looking for people. And I joined, probably started a pandemic or something. And then about a year and a half ago, they asked me to step up to the leadership team, where I've now been running a lot of the external communications. And I'm currently running a publicity campaign for a novella we've got coming up, which is kind of the first time Grimdark magazine has actually done anything on the marketing PR side. And then on the other side, it's been a long struggle to get in, get something that's interesting. So I've done a variety of temporary jobs. I'm now kind of at a point where I've just been told last week that I'm now moving back into being able to acquire titles. So I'm quite excited about that.
We love it. Absolutely love it.
So I got into publishing via academia as well. I did a PhD in English focusing on feminist ecofictions, and the project didn't start off with that topic. I intended to focus on climate fiction, which, if you remember, is the focus of Stelliform Press as well. But when I was doing my literature review, I found that I wasn't really enjoying a lot of the titles that I was reading. I was finding them very white, very male, very het cis, and really craving some more diverse voices on climate and the environment. So that was really the reason why I started Stelliform Press at the very beginning, I was also publishing some of my own stories and getting to know the publishing process from that angle and really thinking, I think I could do this. And, you know, if you start off small, which we did, we started off with a few novellas just to get my feet wet and to figure out, you know, what is it that I don't know about publishing and figuring out things along the way. But really, the goal has always been to make space for marginalized voices within that, you know, subtopic of speculative fiction, the climate fiction, environmental fiction field.
Right on.
So be kind of like starting out, it's going to be like, how did you get to publishing from there? But I grew up in poverty in Arkansas, and I was the first person in my family to attend and graduate college. And when I went for my bachelor's degree, I studied mass media. And while I was there, I did screenwriting. And growing up, like, you know, getting access to like a camcorder in the early 2000s was really difficult for me, but I saved up pennies literally for a long time. And I got my camcorder and I was like, I'm going to be a filmmaker. I'm going to be a screenwriter and this is what I'm going to do. And I was pretty intent on that. And then halfway through my mass media like focus of screenwriting, I had to take a journalism course. And my professor was like, I noticed that you never make the same mistake twice. Like when I correct your pieces, you never make that mistake again. Will you come and work for the campus newspaper? And so through that, I worked for the campus newspaper. I worked for the local newspaper as well. I internshipped with like a health food magazine in Arkansas. And then after I graduated and moved to Boston thinking, okay, I'm going to move to New England and there will be a lot of writing opportunities for me. I was a barista for 3 years. And then I started writing for Medusa is a lot more horror oriented and really like in terms of horror, very interested in exploring taboo subjects. So I started reading more horror that explored taboo subjects and especially by marginalized writers. And then just watching what was going on, like the pulse of like, I guess, discourse on social media as a writer, seeing there was a big uproar kind of about queer representation and what is good and bad queer representation. And as a writer who loves exploring taboos, I was like, wouldn't it be hilarious if I just published a book that leaned into all the taboos that everybody's making TikToks about that they hate and think is bad representation. Like, wouldn't that be hilarious? So that's what I did. And I published the first Book of Queer Saints book. And then when people really loved it and it was nominated for like a British Fantasy Award and all of that, I was like, well, maybe I should start my own press to publish volume two. And that's what I did. And then we published volume two in October. And so I'm very young at this, like very new, but I have learned a lot in a short amount of time.
Very cool.
Well, I just kind of fell into publishing. I came from a world of online video. I had started a successful company through YouTube, worked with a lot of YouTubers and that kind of stuff. So I was used to doing things on my own. When we wanted to make a CD for a musician on YouTube, we printed the CD ourselves. We didn't go to a record label. So when I started writing stories, I just started publishing them on my own. I didn't have any kind of writing community. I didn't have a writing group, nothing like that. But friends bought the stories and occasionally people I didn't know bought the stories, and that felt felt good. And so I approached my debut novel the same way. And I figured, you know, maybe it's time to put a press name on this so it doesn't look so self-published. I thought I could do a good job at making it look professional and maybe trick a few readers who don't normally like indie published or self-published titles. And that went well. I published my debut novel in 2022, and it won the Hoffer Award for Best Commercial Fiction, which was really exciting. And it sold a lot of copies, way more than I was expecting. So I was like, well, maybe I can do this for other people. And so I started Shortwave at that point and brought in one of my friends who was writing a cozy mystery series. And we've published three of her books now. And it all just kind of snowballed from there. I found the online horror writing community and found all these wonderful writing groups to join and work with, and yeah, just kind of went from there, and things are growing incredibly fast. So I am also learning and very new to all of this, making mistakes as I go, but for the most part, not too many, thankfully. So,
right, I'm muted this time. Excellent. So I actually came to focusing more from a reader and aspiring writer kind of point of view. I met the co-founders of Portal Books at a writing group. We were really just talking about the different genres, and Karen, who is one of the founding partners of Portal Books, was traditionally published, and he liked to talk about, I guess, those niche genres that traditional publishers tend to overlook, that don't get a lot of support out there. And someone had mentioned to him that his series, he writes for someone that says, had elements of progression.
I think your the mic might be a little bit muffled, like it might be under or close to your shirt. I'm just curious to see if there's anything covering. I'm not sure if anyone else is having just a little bit of muffling hearing Brooke here. Yeah, okay.
Well, let me try again. Can you guys hear?
Still a little muffled or tinny there.
Oh, let me just use my...
It's using your headphone mic, not your desk mic.
Oh, okay. Why is it doing that? Sorry, guys. Do you want to go, Bryce, and it'll come back to me?
That sounds great.
Yeah. God knows my setup is way worse than yours, so I'm happy to give a second for the mic. This is also really just a sidebar. This is really, really cool, like hearing how everyone comes from different angles, because the writers, especially among us, will know that there's an entire mantra within the writing community that there's like no one way to succeed at writing either. And so it's cool to kind of see those parallels working with the publishing space. Because I have a little bit of a different angle. I also started as a writer. I was lucky enough that my first series gained a good amount of traction, and then for my second series, I decided to try to do something a little bit strange, where I brought on a co-writer friend of mine who was significantly more successful than I was. And is in a lot of ways. Luke is an awesome writer. And within indie publishing and self publishing, there are levers that you can pull to kind of work the system a little bit to your advantage. And one of the things that we did there was the pairing of the authors, which at the time allowed the book to be pushed to multiple audiences, which ended up with the book seeing a good amount of success. And after that happened, I realized that I had a lot of privilege, and I had a system in place that I thought could be leveraged to help other authors, where what Wraithmark started as was an idea of pairing larger authors with smaller authors and having them work together on a project, so that when the book went out, the smaller author's book was also pushed to the larger author's audience, and the books were worked together. This wasn't like the author basically ghostwrites. It was developed together, and I don't know what level of interactions there were, but and we had a good amount of success with that, with a number of different projects. And from there, we expanded into just kind of like general publishing. Picked up some other series that ended up doing really well for us, the Wraithblade Saga and a few others. And then again, we developed outwards from there when we started taking some of our flagship products, which would have been some of my own series, and then the Wraithblade Saga and then Mother of Learning, and we started publishing those on Kickstarter to kind of get print runs done for the books. And because I have an incredible team of people behind me, those books started to get a good amount of traction, and we started getting attention from outside of just the indie space. And over about a two-year period, we've kind of moved from doing hardcovers of stuff that is more like my own stuff to we did the deluxe edition of Legends and Lattes by Travis Baldry last year. And right now we have the deluxe editions of A Darker Shade of Magic by V.E. Schwab on Kickstarter right now. And that's kind of our most recent iteration, although we're looking to expand out of that over time. But it's been a really cool and wild journey. And it's also been really cool to watch other publishers not follow in our footsteps, because we certainly weren't the first persons to do it, but succeed in that space as well. Like, there was a publisher, Lynn Morehouse, I think, that was on Kickstarter, that raised like 35 grand to get their system kind of up and going. It did really well. So it's been really cool to watch like the conglomeration of systems that everyone has kind of described here come together in different ways.
Yeah, super cool. And Brooke, let's give a sound test here.
Yeah, let's see if you guys can hear me. Can you see me all right now?
Incredible. Crystal clear.
Lovely. Cool. So I'm not sure how much you guys heard last time, but I was just saying that I kind of came, I guess, from a different angle. I was more of a reader and kind of an aspiring author, working an office job. I happened to meet Taryn, who's a New York Times bestselling author here in the UK at a writing group of all things. And you know, we got to talking, as I say, about publishing, about overlooked, you know, niche genres. One of the things that had been suggested to him by one of his fans was that his series had elements of progression. His series is the Summoner series. And he got to reading that genre. He got to looking at how it was being published. And it was really only being self-published at that time. A lot of the writers in the genre didn't have a lot of support in terms of cover art, in terms of editing, in terms of, you know, just all the kind of tips and tricks that you get from an established publisher, from a trad publisher, you know, these people didn't have access to. And Taryn was kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, he had mentioned it to his publisher, you know, a few times, and it just wasn't something that they were particularly interested in. So one day we just said, well, why don't we give it a go? Why don't we try to, you know, reach out to these people and see if we can, you know, help them, you know, connect them with cover artists, connect them with, you know, editors, et cetera, et cetera. And the more we looked at it, the more there weren't necessarily a lot of editors that had experience in that space. So I said to Taryn, well, you know, I'll just keep reading and then maybe I can give them some ideas like a beta reader. And, you know, over time, I got a little bit more experience in the genre, and, you know, now I've been editing Lit RPG and Progression Fantasy for about half a decade. And I'm kind of the lead editor at Portal Books, and I work on a number of different projects. And it's just been amazing to see over the last few years the progression genre has exploded. And, you know, we've been able to work with, you know, more and more authors. And it's been really exciting to see, you know, now we have a subgenre on Amazon, which we didn't have before. And it's just been, yeah, a really exciting and a cool thing to follow, especially because, you know, I came in as a fan.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people come into publishing because through some kind of fan relationship of like loving the community or loving the work that's being done or just loving the whole like process of putting a book out and knowing that they want to be a part of it. I think there's definitely a common spirit there. And another thing that I noted from a lot of responses is that there's kind of a much more direct or active relationship with the community and small and mid-sized publishing, like paying attention to what's happening on Book Talk, at discourse on I'm still going to call it Twitter. Or coming over from YouTube. I'd love to hear some thoughts on the relationship between your work, your press view, and then social media and these sort of like public community spaces that publishing participates in and takes part in. And I'd say we don't need to go down the line anymore. If you are excited to jump in on this question, go ahead and raise your hand. If you want to pass on this one, we'll have some more questions coming down talking about different aspects here. But yeah, Bryce, to start.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, I don't know if it was during the stream or before the stream, the parallels of self-publishing, small and indie publishing versus self-publishing in the indie community. And that's another space that's been really, really cool is the community interest and the community engagement that a lot of small and mid-sized publishers can achieve in a way that large publishers can't. You know, Wraithmarked is terrible at it, but we do, you know, maintain our social media accounts in a way that's more than just like randomly like tweeting stuff out and trying to engage and trying to chat with people. We have all of our authors have typically like their own subreddits and stuff like that. And it's really cool to use elements that were and have been so strong in the self-publishing industry and pull those into kind of the mid-sized space where you can connect with people in a way that, you know, companies like Tor and Orbit and all these, it's great. It's amazing that they've had the success and they've had the success for so long, but it is really cool to have tools that can be leveraged in a way that some of the larger presses either can't or don't really. Buddy, you gotta stay still or you're going to knock the computer over. My dog is right next to me, if that wasn't obvious. And that's honestly about it, is more just me ranting about how like how neat it is to have that tool and how important it is to leverage it and be able to access the communities of our authors, of the people who follow our press and the people who just follow sci-fi fantasy in general, whether that's our fantasy on Reddit or Facebook groups and the like. And it's just a really cool lever to pull when we can.
Yeah, awesome. And as we're talking about social media, I'd also love to hear specifically, like, what are the platforms that are most important for you and your work? Something I found is, different perspectives that you take will, you'll sort of lock into, okay, there's a really active community for that on Reddit or on Twitter or on YouTube. But Fab, I'd love to hear your thoughts here.
Yeah, so for us, it's actually quite surprising. Our biggest platform is still Facebook, which kind of keeps astonishing me because for my generation, Facebook has become a graveyard, basically. But so much happens within Facebook groups, within our pages on Facebook, that actually gets so much more eyes on things than Twitter or Instagram or TikTok do. And I think this is actually a point where we really need to work on, just because we don't really have a coherent voice. So I think we're not really using all of these to our best advantage. And I mean, kind of throwing this at you, Caroline, but for a while, the Angry Robot Twitter had this relationship going on with Tor, and there was such a clear voice. And that is something that I thought worked really well and got you a lot more attention.
Yeah, it's funny because as I'm listening to that, I'm thinking of it with like the Angry Robot, like publisher hat on, but also then a publicist thinking in relation to authors. So it might have like two different parts to the answers, but I think the overarching thing for me is social media is that, and you've touched on Fab, every different platform has a different voice, and actually having people in the team that can recognize that and are able to work with it is really important. We've always been lucky that we have had people that Twitter just works for them. So Sam would have been the person who kind of kickstarted that. I loved the banter with Tor. Sometimes it would be slagging each other over different books and authors. It was like this love fest then. And I'm glad you've picked up on that. I mean, Des now runs her Twitter and she still does engage with them. And she has her own voice that she uses on Twitter. And then it's a mixture of like Amy and maybe Des who do Instagram. And it's definitely like Amy and Des who are a different generation to me who do our TikTok. And it's really clear to us when we're looking at different books, what ones we want to actually focus on Twitter, because for whatever reason, that author and that book and that genre, that subgenre, are going to work better there than in something that's maybe like tropey that Instagram and TikTok are going to work better on. But I would say from like, you know, that direct question, it's having a person on the team who really gets it. That kind of feeds into how I always talk to our authors about it, because I think one of the things that must be really overwhelming for authors is all the social media platform. And if there were any of my authors listening, they'd have heard me say this every single time, is not every platform is for every author. Possibly the same for publishers then as well, actually, like Fab, if Facebook works for you, you know, you'd concentrate on it and then maybe try and find a voice somewhere else. Funny, I follow obviously Grimdark across everything and I really like your Twitter. But you see, and as a reader, I see the authors who are on platforms because they think they have to be. And if it's not genuine, it's really obvious. And then it looks like you're shilling your book, as opposed to like being engaged in the community and using that platform to uplift other voices too, and actually being like an active part of it. So I suppose we look at like our publishers' accounts in the same way we want our authors to be genuine, that the person who's running it understands what they want to get out from it. and not just taking the whole time, looking to, as I say, uplift other voices and not just talk about your books and be like an active member of the community.
Yeah, me.
Sorry, I had to unmute. Yeah, I think social media for me, both as a publisher and a writer, is it's a bit of a double-edged sword. And I think it can be different for these presses like Medusa or Alan with Shortwave. Like I know Alan and I know Selena. Just like you aren't part of a team or you aren't part of a really big team. So you're doing it all yourself. I'm just a one man band over here trying to do it all, not just as a publisher, but also as a writer. And then also starting out, like I didn't start out with a nest egg of, you know, like I work part-time as an after-school teacher and a lot of the money that I make there goes into what I do at the press. I don't have sponsors or a lot of the things that like maybe slightly bigger presses or big presses have. And so when I'm engaging on social media, and I liked what Caroline was saying about like, you know, trying to give and not take all the time, it's a very hard thing to balance when you're just one person with no money but a dream, right? So I have found that, you know, I have put the most effort that I could possibly put into trying to be a really good member of the community and give opportunities to folks who may not have it. And it's something that I'm really, really passionate about. And then at the same time, you're running like Kickstarters or you're running like pre-order campaigns and you're like really having to push that, because if you don't, then those writers who are counting on you don't get their thing made. And then because social media is the way it is, there are a lot of folks who only focus on, oh, you're just trying to exploit the community by raising this money. But you don't, like, you need money to make the thing, and you need money to push these authors and these projects forward. So it's a really difficult thing to balance. And I found myself, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how to balance it. Because especially if you're like me, you wear your heart on your sleeve and you're like, you're trying really hard to do good things. When there's criticism, it can hurt really bad. Yeah. And so, yeah, social media is a great thing and also can be a really demoralizing thing for small presses or micro presses like mine.
Yeah, for sure. And Selena, I saw your hand go right up when that was mentioned. I'd love to hear your thoughts or experience there.
Yeah, my experience is similar to Mace in that, you know, when she said that the social media is a double-edged sword, I'm like, yes, absolutely. We started in 2020. We opened for submissions in January, and you know, 2 months later, the whole world is locked down. And so a lot of our first books, really our books from 2020 and our books from 2021, they really didn't have much opportunity to make it out into the world except for through social media. So we were really pushing those books pretty heavily on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, what else, like basically anything that was available. And now, of course, we have the issue with the implosion of Twitter and having built up a considerable following. I mean, it's still small compared to a lot of publishers, but an engaged following, I guess you could say. We had a pretty engaged following on Twitter, and now I'm finding that it's increasingly useless as a platform. And also, you know, there's the ethical considerations, like, do we actually want to be contributing to the business of someone who is reprehensible? So, yeah, we're trying to switch over more towards Instagram. Now that one has its own issues, but the as I've heard people say, the vibes are a lot better there these days. People are more engaged there. I find that posts get more traction. But also with the implosion of Twitter and all of these other social media platforms, you know, trying to take that space, what it amounts to is for a person who is running a press essentially all by themselves, like me and May and a lot of other people on this panel, what it amounts to is like a lot more work. So every time we're posting on social media, it's me putting together those graphics. It's me coming up with the text. It's me having to post it to six different platforms and find a different way to engage with the audiences of each one. And it's quite daunting, and it takes a good portion of the time that I could be spending doing other things, like, you know, contacting reviewers, sending out ARCs, all that stuff. So it's definitely a matter of balance. And I find that, you know, now that it's become very evident that social media is not necessarily as stable as we thought it was, it's also about diversifying your reach and trying to convert some of the people who show interest in the press on social media, convert them to newsletter subscriptions, for example. So diversification, I think, is really important in so many ways.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're seeing the rise and fall of empires in real time. When you've put a lot of your eggs into one of those baskets, it can be terrifying. Bryce, did you have a thought you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to actually highlight like how much effort and work, especially people like Selena and May, are putting in. Because so, like, and Brooke, I'm going to throw you under the bus here with me. Brooke and I have a huge amount of privilege when it comes to publishing, like not only this stuff going on, but we work in an industry that has almost a certain guaranteed level of success, like in the lit RPG progression fantasy space, which is where I got my start, and we have now kind of moved out, but Portal really has a really good firm hold on. There is a, like, you put a book out there and you are going to get some level of traction on that because there is a really solid existing audience that we can tap into on social media spaces that already exist. Our progression fantasy, our lit RPG, stuff like that. But I don't know how big Portal is now, but like I have a 6-person team doing everything that May and Selena, and I think probably Alan, I imagine maybe you too, although that's
one man show.
and I still, like, our team still lets things slip through. Like, our Twitter's tiny, like we don't have the traction, we don't have the time to do all of this stuff, and we're a 6-person team. And granted, we're taking on big projects, so my team is doing a lot of that, but there's a lot of privilege having come from a point of started established success and working in a popular genre and working in a popular space versus like Selena and May are not only coming from a very small publisher space, but working in a targeted area to try to help like underrepresented authors. And like, that is nuts to me in the best possible way. Like, I commend you guys both. It's nuts. But like, I wanted to highlight that extra because like, again, like, with a 6-person team, I can't manage all of that. And so everybody from Selena to Alan, like being able to do that is something that's really, really impressive. And also really like daunting is the word.
Yeah. And something that I'd love to sort of pick up on here is the kind of behind the scenes work of publishing. I know that like what I spend my time doing is, you know, that meme of like what my friends think I do, what I think I do, what I actually do. I feel like publishing is one of those ones where there is a huge gap between what it looks like from the outside and what it's like on the inside. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on like what are the biggest myths that people tend to have about the kind of work you do and the work that happens in publishing versus like what are the things you actually spend your time on or that feel really different from what the expectation is. And Brooke, I know we haven't heard from you in a minute, so I'd love to tag you in at some point in this conversation if you're feeling ready to go.
Yeah, more than happy to. I mean, just speaking to what Bryce was saying before, you know, we're still pretty small. I think mostly by choice, and I think that is, you know, the privilege that we have in this genre. As Bryce said, there's a lot of demand and not a lot of supply in the genre, although it is growing significantly. We have a couple of freelance assistants that help me out, but it's mostly me these days. We started off as three partners, and now it's mostly just me. One of the ex partners, Michael Miller, has had success with his own series, so he's exited the business. And Taryn obviously has his own best selling books to focus on. So being the main non-writer of the group, you know, it's mostly just me. But I do spend a lot of time leaning on the authors. And I think that for me, is a huge amount of what my job as a publisher amounts to, is kind of managing those relationships with the authors, preparing them for the social media world, and kind of saying, okay, I think as Caroline said before, you know, what platform works for you? What platforms are you happy engaging with? You know, what do you need me to take on and help you with? Like, are you comfortable writing copy? Are you not comfortable writing copy? Do you know, want to workshop your posts together? You know, these kind of things, and building those relationships, you know, with the author, and kind of what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with. How much input do you want on the cover? Do you want a lot of input, no input? Do you just want to see some options? You know, these kind of things is a lot of what I spend my time doing. A lot of the, you know, people we work with are also freelancers. So it's, you know, building up relations with, you know, cover artists, with copy editors, and things like that. So actually a large part of being, I guess, a very small publisher, I feel, is kind of managing those relationships, you know, between people. Whereas if I think back to my time in, you know, in a corporate world, it's more about your little slice, your little cog, you know, what you're doing. I think as a small publisher, you have to be a jack of all trades, and you have to very much be able to kind of, you know, work with people and kind of leverage those relationships to make things happen, because that's the only way that you get things done as a small business. Whereas a big business, you have five different people you can call who will do the job.
Yeah, for sure. Alan, yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, before I got into all this, I pictured, you know, publishers of the people kicking back behind their desk reading manuscripts all day. And unfortunately, I have nowhere near as much reading time each day as I would like. You know, most of the days are spent on emails. You know, lots of little issues that come up. We published 12 titles last year. We're publishing 12 titles this year. And again, I'm a one-man show. So I'm doing the interior design, the cover design, the developmental editing, the promotion, the graphics for that, all that kind of stuff. And it just takes away from the time that I'd like to be reading and or writing. And I think that, you know, sometimes people don't understand, even like when you have you catch a single typo in a book, right? But then you have to redo the print copy, you have to redo the EPUB copy, you have to redo the Mobi copy, you have to upload it to all the distributors, you know, over one single typo, you're going to spend 3 hours updating this book. Yep. You know, and again, that just takes away from all the things that you'd like to be doing, contacting reviewers, reading more, you know, even just communicating with authors about their upcoming work. So, yeah, I find the email stuff that I never even thought I had to schedule time for, but now I have to schedule 2-3 hours a day for to be the biggest change in the vision of what I thought it was going to be versus the reality of it.
Yeah, I just sent a project to print, and the number of like, _final_final for real this time, last updated on the exports, because like one line changed or I forgot to re-outline the fonts from the InDesign export. It's just wild.
It matters if it's capitalized for me. If it's lowercase final versus capital final, it's like a totally different thing.
Yeah. If you're shouting it or if you're just sort of stating it plainly. Yeah, May.
Sorry, I'm bad at unmuting myself. Mine's a very quick answer. I could not have imagined how much time I would have spent packing and shipping things and going to the post office. That's like the thing that is the most time consuming for me, especially like after a big Kickstarter project where you've sold like hundreds of books already. Packing and shipping all of those by myself takes ages.
I've done so many shipping parties. I feel you. Cool. Well, I guess it's something that I'm always really interested in, especially because we have sort of some different approaches to what you're publishing and what the relationship with the audience is for that type of publication. But how do you decide what you're going to publish? I'm particularly interested in the balance between like, oh, this is a surefire thing that I think is going to sell versus like, this is new and interesting and I don't know how to sell it, but it feels important or it feels like it's worth carving out a niche for if there isn't one already. So when you're reading a manuscript for the first time, what kind of impressions and reactions are you looking for in yourself? And then how do you make that final decision for like all of that work that you just described, the like doing the editorial, getting it ready, having the relationship with the author, doing the promotions, doing the export and export and export. You know that there's all that work involved if you say yes to this text. So what is it that you're looking for, and how are you deciding that you're ready to like make that commitment to an author and their work? Three at the same time. Let's start with Brooke.
Cool. So I guess, as I said before, Border Books has kind of been relatively small by choice. We've been pretty lucky to have, you know, some books that have come to us that have already been really successful. But the big thing that we've tried to carve a niche out for, because it didn't exist before us, was trying to really focus on that editorial side of things. So developmental editing, structural editing, and really like kind of trying to find stories where the person is kind of like, look, I know I have something here, and I have something that has potential, and it's either already been successful, or I think it could really be successful, but I need some help to kind of to overcome some of these barriers, or to, you know, to kind of nut out some of these creative issues. And so a lot of the time we're looking for books where we think we can add value through a creative partnership. So actually, you know, sitting down with these authors, we do a lot of writer's room type stuff. We brainstorm ideas and we nut out scenes and, you know, kind of really try to polish things to a point where, you know, both ourselves and the author feels like they've gotten some creative value out of the partnership, not just, hey, we're going to advertise and sell your book. And that's kind of the space that we've really tried to play in. And because we have had some successes, you know, now we do very much look for, I think, as May was talking about, for the diamonds in the rough type thing, you know, the thing that the stories that, you know, potentially aren't going to be picked up by some of the larger publishers. So don't already have thousands of followers on a web server website, or, you know, don't have, you know, an already established successful series under their belts. You know, we try to look for debut authors. We try to look for authors where we're just like, oh, wow, you have a really strong voice here, but, you know, your pacing is all off, or, you know, you really need help with your dialogue, or, you know, whatever that might be. And so we try to work with authors where we can, you know, we can kind of bring something out. Because I think, I guess for us, like, especially in a small niche genre, I feel like it's kind of our duty to try and help elevate the genre, you know, to try and help, you know, work with authors that aren't getting the support from traditional publishing. And also just to bring a creative vent to what can be a very commercial relationship, because I think that can sometimes end up feeling quite cold. And so we really, you know, when we work with authors, is kind of a bit of a vibe check first of, you know, is this going to be a really positive, you know, working relationship? And are you going to get a lot of value out of this? Or is it just, hey, I'm looking to sell a book and we're going to sell a book. You know, we wouldn't want to do that as a more of a holistic experience. So that's why we're looking for people that we feel like we can add that additional creative value.
Good answer. Yeah, Alan.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to figure that out. But luckily, as being such a small press with just me, basically we publish the things that get me excited. You know, I started with horror. We added some sci-fi because people were submitting sci-fi stories that were exciting. You know, we do some established stuff. We recently announced a novella coming from Nat Cassidy, who's had a lot of good sales and two really big books. You know, and then we publish debut authors who don't have their own titles, you know, and it's just, again, it's just, was the story exciting to me? And then hopefully I can get other people excited about the story as well. You know, the one thing that hasn't worked for us as much as I thought it would was anthologies. You know, I see a lot of anthologies coming out. I see a lot of hype for them. But for us, we haven't really seen the sales backing up that hype, no matter how many times people talk about the stacked TOCs and whatever else. So that's the one area I'd like to see maybe a little bit more support there. Or maybe we're just doing something wrong with the anthologies and have to figure that out. But the single author titles have all done well, so I'm happy with that.
Very cool. Caroline, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll jump in with Nangaroo about that on, because I know I mentioned Tora, but I think it being a baby imprint, it's more apt to talk about Angry Robot. And I have to say, the way we acquire titles is something we're quite proud of as a team. There's essentially three avenues that the books come into editorial. We accept agented submissions all year long. Agents and editors have their own relationships that are completely separate, obviously, to my area. And again, like I think Brooke was, you said about, you know, how much of this job is based on relationships. Very much true in publicity as well. And I definitely underestimated that when I was first moving into it and Excels. I didn't realize how many Excel sheets I would have for just my general day-to-day life. But we have, age-gated submissions are can come in any time of the year. But we have been running for years what's called the open door. It opens for maybe 3-4 months, and that is for unagented authors. And like that, it's very much people who've been trying for years, or their first time, or they're only starting out, especially marginalized voices who historically find it harder to get agents. It's like an open door, literally. They can submit. There is like a wait time. I think we can get sometimes 1,000+ manuscripts that come in, and the editors, it's a small team in terms of this. There's 6 of us, and there's only 3 editors. So they, you know, they're splitting their time, dipping in and out of that. So there can be quite a time on it, but it is at least a venue to come in. And then what we started 2 years ago now was Black Voices Matter. And that is a permanently open door to Black unagented authors. And they can come in. And one of the things that the AOR team does and the editors do is if they find a submission, either in Open Doors or Black Voices Matter, that they're interested in, that they're excited about, that they think we can do a good job with this, they talk to the author. But what's really important is that they will speak to them and say, go try and find an agent. Tell them you have, you know, a possible offer, because that opens doors for agents. And then that ideally will mean the author gets the best out of both, because they're not going in, especially if they're debut, to a publishing house, not knowing what they're doing, not knowing what they're looking for. And we don't want that for authors. We want them getting the most and the best out of what they can. So that's how essentially Angry Robot works in like a wider sense. Internally, it's the joys of a smaller publishing house is how involved we all are. Like if an editor falls in love with a book, they fill out acquisition forms. There's like a system that we have internally, but we all get a say in it. So our acquisitions meeting will have salespeople, they'll have rights, they'll have publicity, they'll have marketing, and we all get the manuscript, we all get to read it. And I think it's quite vital actually, because we all get a say on where it will be placed in the year. It mightn't mean that it goes exactly as we'd want it to go. It also doesn't mean we'll get the book, because it's something that's untalked about actually, is how many heartaches you have in publishing. And you watch a book that you really want hit the Sunday Times bestseller or something, and you're like, oh, I wanted that one. But it's part and parcel of it. Some you get, some you don't. But we can then talk as a team. And, you know, we do look at things across the board. We might say that month is actually leaning too heavy. It's all men. We got slipped through. We need to change this. And we look at it kind of what's happening per month, what per season across the year. And that's all part and parcel of our acquisition conversation.
Yeah, me.
I feel very fortunate that I can just look at something that I like and be like, yes, I will take that. You know what I mean? I don't have to discuss it with anybody, but I choose things based on, I don't know how to really describe it, but as a very creative, artistic kind of person, if I read something and it inspires ideas about, oh my gosh, the cover art. Oh, we could illustrate this. We could do this. Oh, I know the perfect illustrator for this. And then just getting like really excited about the project itself. That's how I choose things. I published a chapbook by Emma E. Murray last year. That it was called Exquisite Hunger. And I read the story and I just immediately knew what I wanted for the art, who the art should be by, like what the cover should be, and just could approach these people and lay it out and just get so excited about somebody else's work, but being able to like transform it into something beautiful. And then I think that was Emma's first solo, like first project that had just her name on it and the illustrator, but her name on the cover. And then right after it was published, she sold like 2 novels and a novella. And like now she's like one of those up and coming writers that a lot of people are talking about. And I think it started there just with somebody being that excited and like having a vision for how to present her work. And she was agented when we started this. It just, you know, sometimes pieces just fall into place like that where two creative people get together. And I approach all of my projects, the Queer Saints books. We have an anthology coming out next year, The Secret. We're going to announce it on Valentine's Day. But all of these projects, I approach them all like that. I just have this vision, and I know who can make that come to life. And I get excited just talking about it.
Rock on. That's awesome. Yeah, Selena.
My experience is very similar to May's and probably Alan's as well, where I get to choose basically what inspires me and what I get excited about. Of course, Stillform has a very, relatively narrow focus compared to some presses, only taking climate fiction or environmental fiction. And so we do have open submissions usually every 2 years. A lot of the time, the stuff that comes in, a lot of it gets rejected because it's not environmental or it's not about climate. So that narrows down what we take. But really, I'm looking for stories that are not just depressing. Climate is a really tough topic, especially when it's written from a marginalized perspective, because there are so many intersections of struggle within marginalized communities and the topic of climate and environment and the way that those communities have been positioned within that issue by, larger systems. So we're looking at that, but we're looking at unique ways of telling those stories. And so I can usually tell within the first, say, 10 pages, whether that story is told with a unique voice or a unique approach. And I do get super excited about it. And one of the things that has been really surprising about starting a press is how excited I am about different parts of the process that I had no idea about before. Like, May, you were talking about the just knowing what artist you want to get on that project. And art direction has been such a fun thing for me. I'm really lucky in that one of my good friends from undergrad is an artist, and so she's done a lot of the Stelliform covers. But I've also made a ton of really great connections with artists, and getting their feedback and giving sort of direction as to what I want to see on the cover or what's really important. And also when there's a cultural consideration for the story or for the author, I want to get that author's feedback. What do they not want to see on that cover? What would be, really exciting for them? And like, also, help them to sell that book, right? If they're really excited about the look of the book, they're going to be more effective in that way as well. So yeah, it is really about excitement for a lot of small presses. And yeah, for me too, I get really excited about unique approaches to the topics that we're looking at. And that it's not just about the story, it's about the whole process. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, I think it's well said. Like, I think that publishing can be such an uphill battle. There's so much work involved in it. If you're not doing it for a book, if you're doing it for a book that you don't love, then why? Like, why? Do it for a book you love. You may as well. You're going to be in the trenches. Go to war for a book you love. Yeah. And Fab, I think I saw your hand go up for a moment there. Do you have a thought you wanted to add?
Yeah. So at Grindr Magazine, we've basically got three different publishing arms. So there's publishing where, we publish longer form fiction anthologies. Then we've got the magazine, which is mostly short stories. And then we've also got our website, where we post book reviews and interviews and articles. So it's kind of different considerations that go into all of them. But for all the bigger projects, it's really about Adrian, our editor-in-chief's gut instinct. If he thinks, yes, I want to do that, I want to spend all of this time and money on this. And that has really led to some interesting things, like the novella we're about to publish, which I describe as literary grimdark fantasy horror. So it's got a really unique voice. And I think just generally, especially when it comes to the magazine, it pulls into what Selena said about not just depressing. So for us, it's really important that people understand what we consider Grimdark to be, that it's not about misery porn, that it's not just very depressing stories, but it's very much about a morally ambiguous character in a world that is very much stacked against them. And I think that understanding is what we're looking for more than anything else. And on the kind of review side, I have been able to, because I coordinate all of these, to really see what we are publishing, what we're looking at, and think about what books should we also write about? Who should we give a voice to? And I've really been trying very hard to broaden our remit and to diversify who we cover. And it's been really good to see how we really been able to cover a lot more authors of color, a lot more queer authors, authors with disabilities. Whereas, you know, if you think about Grimdark, your initial thought is going to be Mark Lawrence, white dude writing evil stuff. And that's really what we're looking to move away from, that Grimdark can be so much more. And maybe I should also say, we do have an open window every year. We're going to be running it for the first time in a couple of years this year. And also, we're always happy to get people contacting us for coverage, or potential reviewers just emailing in and asking what's going on.
Awesome. And I think at the end, we'll be doing a little bit of, we'll have a chance to talk about projects you have going on. If you have any open submission windows and also like things you'd love to see in your read pile, I want to talk about those because I want to give, the next question I was going to ask is, both in the submissions process, but then also in the promotions and editorial processes, what are you looking for in a good collaborator? What are you looking for in an author that would make them a good collaborator? So how can they prepare their manuscript to give it the best chance with you? And then what are you looking for in that ongoing relationship of making sure this is something that you can, usher out into the world together with the best chance of finding its audience? Yeah, Selena.
I know this answer is going to be annoying, possibly annoying to some writers, but just be aware, have read some of our titles to know what kind of thing we're interested in. And I know that's a lot to ask of people, but it's really important because often I think it's actually on our submission page that we're looking for works that are extending our current catalog. So they're connected to the catalog in some way, but also pushing it further. So yeah, it's really important that you are aware of what kind of thing the press that you're submitting to is publishing. And I think that that's especially important for the very small presses because we often have very, very specific things that we're looking for, very specific things that we are passionate about and want to put out in the world. And you might get a more general call from a bigger publisher. But for us, it's very important to have read a little bit of what we've put out into the world.
Yeah. Bryce.
This is gonna seem pretty broad, but it's really important for us specifically to authors and writers that we work with. And I think it's broadly applicable. It is very good to be flexible and to keep an open mind, but it's also good to know what boundaries are important to you. And I think May, you had mentioned this on your, no, actually Selena, you mentioned this on the covers, that there were important things that different authors wanted to have and didn't want to have. We don't have quite as many restrictions because we typically work with established authors. We have that privilege. But it is very, very, like talking about contacts, if you want to maintain a healthy contact and if you want to maintain a good working relationship, being flexible and knowing that like, hey, this may not come out exactly how you have it in your head. You know, there are other teammates, the artists that we select that we envision may not be exactly in your style and the like. It's really, really important to have that flexibility. But at the same time, it's also really important to know what is important to you going in, even if that's something that you develop during the conversation. So for example, we have the great pleasure of working with V.E. Schwab right now, And Victoria and her team have been absolutely brilliant. They are like the perfect people to work with because they have been really, really chill about like, here's all these, this art, here's all the authors that we're or artists that we're working with here. Here's the things that we have in mind. And 9 times out of 10, they have been like, this isn't what we had in mind, but this is really cool. This is awesome, et cetera, et cetera. But specifically, there was a character that we were not aging appropriately. And it wasn't the artist's fault. It was our fault because our briefs were not like detailed enough and we weren't giving enough feedback. But Victoria and her team kept coming back to the drawing board of like, this is important, this is important, this is important. And that's really important of like, of knowing where your limitations are, but also having the flexibility, because that is the kind of author that we love to work with, because you're going to give us the room to work in, but you're also going to provide constraints that are really, really important. And especially since you know your own work, there are going to be things that we don't know as well as you or your potential community, either now or in the future, are going to be really, really important. So having that kind of balance of like, you guys can have free rein on certain things, but there are elements that are really, really important to have right, is a good thing to have. And if you don't have it now, it's a good thing to develop, just like thick skin in this industry.
Yeah, like I saw a hand from Fab there.
Yeah, so I mean, this kind of feeds into what Bryce has been saying, but I think just from everything I've seen, both in traditional publishing, but also in being part of a very small publisher, is that the core thing as an author, as well as a publisher, is to be very clear about expectations. Knowing what's important to you, knowing what the others can do for you, but also not assuming anything and really being clear and communicative. And that, I think, is kind of across the industry one of the most important things.
Yeah, that's such so well said. Expectation. It's funny. There's a podcast that I listen to, which is they have episodes called D&D Court, where they basically do, it's kind of like the Reddit, the Am I the Asshole subreddit, but for conflicts that come up in a D&D party. And in almost every case, it is like, communicate with your players, communicate expectations. And I feel like the same thing is true for publishing. Like, being able to communicate expectations heads off so many problems. And like, in a situation, Bryce, where an author, maybe does have had a different vision for the cover, being able at least to be comfortable saying like, hey, I'd imagined it going this way. Is there a possibility of exploring another cover option? Like, being able to start the conversation, you may not get what you want, but being able to sort of put your voice to that helps a lot. I know in my early experiences in publishing, I was so afraid of taking up space that I like signed contracts that were not particularly advisable because I was afraid to ask for changes or clarifications. So like, you can always bring the conversation to the table, I think is a good one way to be a good collaborator. Bring the conversation to the table, ask the question. Worst thing that can happen is that you hear no. The best thing that you can happen is that you get closer to the middle. Yeah, Bryce.
This is super quick, and I know Caroline also had her hand up, but just as an aside, if you're working with a publisher that is not willing to have that conversation, bring it to the table, run. Like, do not work with that publisher.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like a nodding dog after Fab and Bryce. I'm like, yeah. I did enjoy everybody's reaction to you, Fab. You were like, that is spot on. It's funny, when I was like making notes for this and we got to this question, I put like manage expectations and being really open, which is really lovely to hear that everybody is like exactly thinking those same lines. It's something that we do when we have new author conversation with publicity hat on, is to ask them, you know, how do you foresee this book coming out? Like, are there spaces that you would love to see your book? And obviously people are going to say like New York Times bestseller. So I'm like, give me your, like, what is your goal? And it's actually one of my favorite conversations to have, because you'll get people to say, I read Tor.com every single day. And if I could write an article, or if my book could be reviewed there, I would be delighted. And it's just so lovely watching people. And I'm a bit like, I think that's something I'm confident in doing. I can make this dream come true. But it's very much the communication. And as for a good collaborator, it's giving you that, like, what would they be happy with? Very much part of it is, from a publicity point of view, is what topics do you not want to talk about? What do you want me to head off at the pass so that it doesn't even come to you? But also getting them to give you that list of places that they'd like. Like, we are, like, I am the only sole publicist on the team. And I can't even cover all the books we do per month. So it's managing my expectations sometimes without overpromising by accident, because like, we get that excitement and a book comes in and we think, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then you go, I can't be everything for everybody for every book. And that's probably actually one of the hardest things I've learned in publishing, is when I've had to go, I kind of admit that that has to go. I can't be everything for that one book without letting something else drop. But I think authors understanding that, and it's never done out of like badness or malice. It's literally managing my own time and everything you have to get done. But I think having that conversation is really, really great. And some of the best authors would be like, I saw this book, I know it's similar to me, they featured on this place. You probably have it. Do you know them? Because you know what? It could be 3 times out of 10 I go, I've never heard of that reviewer. Because across the platforms, it is actually impossible to keep up with everybody. You know, you could have your core set of bloggers who I still love working with so much, as well as social media platforms and outlets. But there will always be somebody you've never heard of that actually within that area of that book is perfect. So it's being open to the fact, you know, kind of lean into what Bryce said, you don't know everything. So I'll always be open to an author coming to me and saying, can you make sure you send the book here? I'd really like to, you know, can we aim for this? But also them realizing that it's something I say as well. Sometimes the most work goes into the book that actually doesn't get a lot, because you don't stop at one no. You keep going. And it can be like a book that has a little campaign that actually took the most time as well. So it's just that it's ups and downs. That's not completely nonlinear in the world of publishing.
Yeah. One of the things that I know, I spend a lot of, I don't publish other people's work, but I spend a lot of time talking to aspiring writers and authors. And one of the things that I always try and set the expectations of is that, like, in publishing, most of what happens will be outside of your control. So going in, remembering to always be in love with the process of creativity, because the thing you can control is how much writing you do, how much you love your work, and how much you care about your work, and how much you can represent your heart and soul and all the things you care about in it. What you can't control is you know, what the Goodreads reviews are going to be or what the numbers are going to be. So going in with those expectations, being as open and honest with yourself as you can, I think is really a healthy way to stay as a writer in an industry that can be really difficult. Fab.
Yeah, so it feels like we also need to kind of bring up that publishing is not a meritocracy. Like, you need to be at a certain level to be in the pool, but at that point, it's a lottery. You know, you can be the best writer in the world, you can have bad luck. You can be great and have all the luck and do really well. But we really need to make sure that everyone knows it's not your own fault. Mm-hmm. It is often very much just the luck and just not being the right person at the right time. Because yeah, that is so key to how publishing happens.
Yeah, and staying in it, I think staying involved, you know, maintain, like, showing up to the space again and again increases your odds of winning the lottery. It's never a guarantee, but you get a few more tickets. You get a few more tickets. That's kind of all you can really count on. You cannot plan for a biggest Dickolus situation. Lightning strikes like that very, very randomly. I think those authors had shown up to their communities and been present for a long time. So, you know, the chances of that happening certainly had increased. Any other thoughts on sort of good signs of a good collaborator, or ways that authors can be good collaborators? Cool. Well, then I've got a little question. One thing I want to do quickly is reiterate for, I know we've had some people, some viewers cycle in and out, but if you have any questions that you want to ask our panel, you could go ahead and put those in the chat in the comments, and we'll have a chance to pull those up on the screen and have our panelists answer those. But in the meantime, I just get to cherry pick all of my favorite questions that I've been super excited to ask these folks. Another question that I have is for, like, bibliophiles, for readers, for people who love reading, what are the biggest things that they can do to support a press of your size? And that goes from, like, buying the book to whatever comes after there. Okay, so can I see the hands again? I missed the hands and I want to do, okay. Let's start with May, and then we'll go Alan, Brooke, Bryce, and Caroline.
Funnily enough, mine was just a joke raising hand because everybody was raising their hands, but... I think really buying the book, reviewing it, and telling other people about it, because I think I have an example. So the first Queer Saints book did really well for an anthology that was published by someone who had never published a book before. Like, it did really well and had a lot of
great reviews and then had a nomination and was a really good experience. And readers were like, we want volume two. We want a volume two. Give us a volume two. And I was like, okay, I'll give you volume two. So I was like, this one's going to be bigger. It's going to be better. I know what I'm doing now. I was so excited. Everybody wanted it, it seemed. Then I published it and it's like, nobody really bought it. Nobody's really reviewing it. Doesn't feel like a lot of people are reading it. And so I think that it's like, kind of like, take that excitement that you have for it and then follow through. You know what I mean? Like, because know that like what we do is, I mean, I think especially for like people who are just solo running this stuff, like we do it because, you know, we love the people who want to read it. Like we want to give this, like, that's how I feel anyway. It's like, I want to give this to you. I want to give this to the authors, this amazing opportunity. Like, at least I want it to be an amazing opportunity. And so just, I can't reiterate it enough. Like, if you read it, if you buy it, talk about it, tell people about it, tell people about your favorite stories, tag the authors in things that are good. Don't tag the authors in things that are bad. And just talk about it, really. Like, I think that word of mouth on social media right now, and especially for small publishers, that's the best way.
Right on. And is it like Goodreads? Is that the number one place to do reviews, or where's most important for you to see those reviews come in?
I think Goodreads is probably, but also I like when people post their reviews on Instagram too, because like Bookstagram is a really big deal. And I feel like every time I see a Bookstagram review on like one of those big accounts, I get a boost in sales. So I'm not super involved on TikTok though, so I can't speak to that, but I think that TikTok was probably a good selling point too. Because I've seen some things, but I'm just not on TikTok, so I don't know.
Cool.
Yeah. I would say the most important for us is buying direct versus any other retailer. We do a lot of like special edition things and hardcovers and things like that. When we sell a hardcover through any other retailer, we make a buck. When we sell it on our web shop, we make $13 to $14. And that's incredible for us. It's, you know, it's the equivalent of selling 14 times more books. So I would say that if you're able to, because I know it typically, you know, you're going to be paying shipping where you're not going to be paying shipping if you're buying from Amazon or whatever. But if you're able to, buying direct really helps more so than anything else. But also the reviews, sharing it, you know, and one of our best selling books, in fact, our best selling book was the one that we gave away the most ARCs for. We had a sign up form and we didn't say it publicly at the time, but we said no to no one. So anyone who signed up for that form got the ARC. And that was our best selling book because of all of the reviews and the public support for it, just posting and sharing it with their friends.
Sweet. I think I saw Brooke's hand, or actually Selena.
What was I going to say? I was going to say that, buying direct is great. Also for us, the amount of money that goes to us and the author is higher for digital books. So buying eBooks, even though it is a, you know, it's cheaper for readers to do, it's actually better for us. Another thing that I think is important is, if you are a writer who is part of any associations looking for opportunities to nominate small press books for awards is really important, because that way the book can reach far more people than it probably did during its debut. For us, that's really the way that a lot of people have come across Stelliform books. I have this one right here beside me. This one just won the Ursula K. Le Guin Prize for Fiction. And when it came out, it did fairly well, but it wasn't like one of the top ones for our catalog. But after that prize, it certainly rocketed to the top of our list. So it's super important. I think that it's really important to challenge Tor supremacy on the short list for awards.
Yeah, super, super solid point. Yeah, that's awesome. Fab, I think I saw your hand up there. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got two things to add to this. Like, one is a probably more Grimdark specific than others. So for us, it's really important that people actually click affiliate links on our reviews, because that's how we pay to keep the doors open. But then also as a more general thing, pre-orders are great, but you don't need to be able to personally make them. You can request books to be bought by your library, which is not only the book sales, but every single time someone takes it out of a library, there's a little bit of money that trickles down. So, just go and request hundreds of books at your local libraries. It doesn't cost you anything, and it really does help.
Yeah. Awesome. Love that recommendation. Cool. Well, I think we've got 10 minutes left, so I would love to hear from each of you. This will be we'll do a full round down the line here. I would love to know kind of what the next project you're excited about that you have coming out is, what you'd love to see more of in your to-be-read pile, and then where folks can find you online. Love to hear that from you. We'll start with Caroline.
I'm going to have to give a shout out to my author, Stephen, who's just texted me that his author said, don't look so terrified. Thank you for making me now want to laugh in the middle of the battle. I suppose I can't speak on what I'd like to see more of in one sense, because, I focus on the publicity, and our editors, they have such a varied level of interest anyway. It's the exciting thing of having four people bringing books that they're really passionate about, is that we do get a massive range of different subgenres. I am going to grab my favourite arc at the minute, which I have prepared. This is Evocation by S.T. Gibson.
I actually brought that one on holiday with me. It's right here.
Ab, I love you. This is our super lead for the year. It's by S.T. Gibson, who self-pubbed Diary of Blood. And then sold it and an Education of Malice to Orbit. And we got Evocation, which is her four book series, which is just starting in May. And it is the biggest campaign we've done, I think, at least the near future and the near past. And it's something that we're really, really excited about. We announced that we're bringing her over from America to the UK. So it's like something for like a publisher of our size. What's going into it is massive. And it has been the most collaborative fun. It's like all the good bits of everything we've said we have with Saints, which we adore. Stephen, your books are there, because now I know you're watching. That's Coward and the Warrior. And that's what's majorly coming up this summer, which Lovely. Also feels like picking your favorite children. I'm not going to lie. I don't know if anybody else feels like that when they're asked to pick a book. I'm like, I love them all.
Yeah, for sure. And where can folks find you online if they want to see sort of the broader spread of titles?
Well, Angry Robot Books across all platforms, and Datura Books. Nice and simple.
Awesome. Very cool. I'm Fab.
Yeah, so our big project at the moment is In the Shadow of Their Dying, which is a novella co-written by Anna Smith Spark and Michael R. Fletcher. So kind of two very different voices playing off each other. And this is our first like proper campaign. So I have been sending out little physical paperback arcs from my tiny flat in London. And it's been really good to see how excited people are getting about it and how we can really reach new audiences as well. I'm not on the commissioning side at Grimdark Magazine, so I can't really speak to what they're looking for at the moment, but I would always say, message us, email us, understand what we're doing, and help us diversify. And the same goes for, any indie authors out there. Do get in touch with us if you think it's a good fit. For any, small presses, please just like email us. And the same goes for people who are like, I want to do that book reviewing thing. I think that would be pretty cool. So we're always open to people pitching us. And you can find us at grimdarkmagazine.com and basically variations of Grimdark Magazine, Grimdark Mag, across all social platforms.
Awesome.
So Stellform publishes really only four or five titles a year. So we just published a couple months ago this book, Green Fuse Burning by Tiffany Morris, which is gorgeous. And if you love swampcore indigenous horror, this is a great book to check out. So there's that one. The next one that's coming is a sort of a shapeshifter fantasy noir detective story set in Guatemala called The Jaguar Mask by Michael J. DeLuca. Really excited about that one. The cover is being released next week, so we're going to have a really fun cover reveal for that one. We are actually open for submissions right now, only for BIPOC authors. So I would love to see more stories from BIPOC authors come into our submission queue. We're going to be making some acquisition decisions really soon. So it's actually only open for like eight more days. So I would love to see more. And where can you find us? We are at www.stelliform.press, and we have Stelliform Press at basically all of the social media platforms except for TikTok, which I obstinately refuse to sign up for.
Awesome.
So this isn't on purpose, but the next Medusa title that's coming out is actually my own book. It's called I'm Sorry If I Scared You, and it's coming out on June 4th. But then on Valentine's Day, we have a super big announcement that I can't talk about, but it's going to be a great opportunity for folks to submit short stories to an anthology that I'm not telling you about yet. But it will be dark, horror, queer, and it has to do with monsters. And yeah, you can follow us at Medusa House on Twitter/X or Medusa.house on Instagram, and look out for that announcement on February 14th. And yeah, what else? Oh, yeah, you can find me at May is Afraid on social media platforms as well. And I'm super receptive if you ever have any questions. I'm usually on those accounts to answer any questions you might have about Medusa or upcoming submission periods.
Right on.
Well, we have 12 titles come up this year, and I'm equally excited about every single one of them. A couple of cool projects this summer. We're doing a novelette by Clay Chapman, and it's going to be illustrated by Trevor Henderson. So I'm really looking forward to that. That should be big. We also, our readers seem to be enjoying most the Killer VHS series that we started last year. So these are standalone novellas, but they're all kind of tied together in that they include found footage, VHS stuff within the plot of the story. And those have been doing really well for us as well. We're online at shortwavepublishing.com. You can find us on any social media at Shortwave Books. We're not really open to submissions currently because our calendar is extremely full, but sometimes they slip through the cracks anyway. So if you want to be bold and email, potentially I'll be able to take a look at it.
Awesome.
Cool. So, we only publish British Fantasy and Lit RPG, but because there's not a huge amount of it out there, our submissions are always open. So we're always happy to hear from people. Our website is portal-books.com, because when we tried to buy the domain, we couldn't get it without the dash. So there you go. But the rest of our socials are Portal Books Publishing. So across, you know, Facebook, Twitter, etc. As I said, always open. So, you know, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. I know a lot of people are kind of like, it's very scary to reach out to a publisher. It seems like a very formal relationship. It seems like a very big deal, but it's not. We're just people, and we're always excited to get these books, to look at these books, and, you know, potentially work with you. And at the very least, we might be able to give you some feedback on your story. You know, we try to read and give at least a little bit of feedback to every story that we receive. So, you know, please do reach out. In terms of projects, yeah, they're my children. I really honestly cannot pick the one that I'm most excited about. So I'll just go chronologically. We've recently just put out the conclusion of our Time Loop series, Dear Spellbook, by Peter J. Lee, which has just come out in the last couple of weeks. We're looking forward to a couple of new series that will be starting this year. We have a System Apocalypse, actually a couple of System Apocalypse stories. One is Gene Harvest by Josh Ritu, and another one is First Necromancer of Royal Road fame by Cold Fang. Both those are System Apocalypse stories, and I'm really excited about them. And then we have some heavy hitters coming later in the year. We have Azrin Thaler 4 and Ripple System 5, which, yeah, really excited about those stories. But I think the big thing that I want to say is, you know, please reach out, because we're always willing to talk to people, because this is what we love doing.
Just to pop it back a hot minute, Brooke and I were laughing earlier when people were talking about heartbreaking stories about losing books because Portal and Wraithmarked have gone back and forth on different books before, including the Azurinth Healer series, which is really cool. So I'm glad he shouted that out. On Wraithmark's side, like May, a lot of our projects are not things that we can actually talk about right now, unfortunately. Although we do have some cool stuff coming up. If I had to pick, which again, children, but we have had a lot of people asking about reprints of our deluxe edition of M.L. Wong's The Sword of Kaigen, which was really popular, and we sold out pretty much immediately, and people keep asking for more. And the announcement's not going to be exactly what people expect, but there's good news there coming later this year. As for our submissions, unfortunately, like Alan, we are also closed, but we are pretty strictly closed. Unfortunately, we kind of have to be invite only right now, although we're looking to open up options in the future. And as for where you can find us, we're basically Wraithmarked everywhere, which is Wraithmarked, because I was an idiot when I named my own company and decided to make it something that was really hard to remember and really hard to spell for a lot of people. That's us.
And you can find me as at Story Engine Deck on most socials. We have a new deck of writing prompts called the Lore Masters Deck, which is a little deck for weaving together webs of lore. So that period of your creative process where you have a wiki kind of exploding in your head, it's a way to get that down on a table through cards and be able to build it out in a more like systematic way. And you might find some cool, fun, surprising lore connections in your own work. And that's what I've got going on. But to all of our panelists, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight, the personal storytelling, and getting to hear about your upcoming works. It's super duper awesome. I hope that everyone who's either watching this later on the, because I believe it will be hosted after it's finished, you can check it out on YouTube. And to the folks who are watching live right now, please go check out the books from these fine presses. Leave the Goodreads review, tell someone about it, post it to Instagram. We'd love to see this new exciting wave of 2024 titles celebrated in the world as much as it deserves to be. Thank you so much to everyone. Cheers. We'll catch you on the next one.